And I'd like now to welcome Robin Rom. She is professor of creative writing at the College of Santa Fe, and she's the author of the new book, The Mercy Papers, a memoir of 3 weeks. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having me.
So this is a book, pretty heavy duty, about the last 3 weeks of your mother's life. How did you decide to write about this, and not only just like for yourself and family, but for an anonymous public?
Well, you know, I never did decide that, actually. I'm a fiction writer, and I was in graduate school when my mother got word that she really was going to die. She'd been sick since I was 19 years old. And I went home the summer before she died, and I was trying to write fiction, and I was stuck, couldn't do it. And then I went home again. I took time off of graduate school in the fall, and she died in the winter. And I moved back into my parents' house, and I felt like I couldn't write fiction because I just couldn't be interested in anything imaginary when I was confronting so much real, urgent drama in my actual life. And one of my professors suggested that I just stop trying to write fiction and write what was happening. And that was actually the start of the book, although I never thought I was writing a book.
Did you write while your mother was still alive, or did you sort of piece this together afterwards?
I did both. I wrote about 30 pages, I think, in my parents' house when my mom was dying. And I didn't know if I would continue doing anything with it. And then when I went back to Berkeley, California, which is where I was living, I did. I wrote about 90 pages in a big rush in about a week right when I got back to California, because I felt like I just had to get it down.
Right. Yeah, and it's an interesting thing, because I think for everybody who's lost a parent or a beloved relative, there is something about that time which is very hard to remember after it's over. Somehow the nature of the world you live in completely changes, even just after the day they die.
I think that's true. I think we tend to erase the details of it. It's too hard. It's too painful. And if I hadn't written this book in that tiny little window, I don't think I would have ever written it.
So there's a lot in the book about the response, not only of you, the author, but of various people to death itself. And one of the things that's striking is that when your own mother was diagnosed with cancer, shortly thereafter, her mother began the process of dying, and your mother's response was, "No, you can't die. I need a mother right now." And that's kind of, that was kind of your reaction as well.
Yeah, well, I think that is one of the many responses to death, is that it's just not allowable. You know, it cannot happen. And there's a real fury and outrage, I think, that's real and universal at when confronting death. And I think that is what people are responding to in this book, which is interesting to me, that that's the thing that maybe is slightly taboo. You know, we're supposed to be bigger than that. We're supposed to allow people to die with, you know, peacefully. And this, and I do think that, you know, we should. That's a good goal. But there is also this other truth that that's very hard to do.
And it's hard to do, I think. I mean, watching you, the narrator of this book, you feel that you're too young and that your mother is too young, and it just must not happen. And so there, it's almost like the textbook, you know, denial and bargaining and anger stages that you have, except you might have them all at once. Mm-hmm. This must not happen, and any acknowledgement that it is happening on the part of other people meets with utter anger and irritation, mm-hmm, on your part.
I think that's accurate. Yeah. It was very difficult to... Well, one of the things that was particular about my mom and her illness is that she was sick for 9 years, and so a family dealing with such a long illness gets conditioned to fight it, and it's very hard to suddenly change course. And
right.
And that was definitely part of my confusion and I don't know, anger or resistance. No one gives you the map for that. So.
And when they do, it's irritating.
It is irritating. You know, I had a hospice nurse give me a pamphlet, and it was full of typos, and it was full of bland advice. And death is so particular, and love is so particular, and everybody's death of a loved one is particular. And that cannot be acknowledged in some of those sort of manuals, because they're manuals. And I wanted to, when I was putting this on paper, what I wanted to put down was the particular details, the particular nature of loss.
there's also, one family member after another. There's a very poignant moment, at least it was poignant for me, where your mother, who's pretty close to death, asks your father what he will miss about her, and he refuses to do that for her until after she's dead, and he does it at the funeral, but she asks repeatedly. And one begins to get the sense that the people who, and this is another theme that's addressed in the book over and over, the people who are really equipped to deal with the dying person are the non-family members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting to me to see what people's limits were. You know, my father could administer medicine, he could help with so many aspects of my mom's care, but that question, what will you miss about me when I'm gone, was just too much for him. He felt that was too much pressure, and it was really, my mother was asking him to acknowledge that she was going to die, and when it came to that, he just couldn't do it.
We're talking to Robin Rahm, and the book is called The Mercy Papers, a memoir of 3 weeks. Was there ever a moment, I didn't see it in the book, maybe I missed it or maybe you didn't write it, where you connected with your mother and you both acknowledged that she was dying?
Yeah, there were definitely moments where that happened. I think they happened before the 3 weeks in the book, and so I think they're done more in memory scenes. But my mother, I was in denial for a very long time that she would die, and that denial is so linked to hope that someone will survive. So it's useful, and I think it can do wonders for someone who's sick. But when it got closer, in that summer before she died, we did sit on the sofa, and she would try to get me to talk to her, and I would say how much I didn't want her to die, and it was incredibly painful. But yes, it was acknowledged, and we did discuss it.
Another thing that's very hard, and I think this is something that a lot of people have to face who are going through this kind of process, especially death from cancer, is you're always having to make that trade-off for the patient, or the patient has to make that trade-off for themselves between, on the one hand, being alert and coherent, and on the other hand, being free from pain. And you have a pretty hard view of the hospice worker who's taking care of her, to the point where it makes the reader kind of cringe. But both you and your mother and your father had to continually face that.
Well, it's interesting, in this culture we hire people to come and help us with the dying, and generally they're people who don't know the family and who are hired at the last minute to come in and adjust medicine and make sure the house is ready and help you deal with arrangements. And I think at times this can go very well, but there are also situations where this doesn't go well and a nurse isn't very well matched with the family. And it became certainly contentious with our hospice nurse, who was doing things without consulting the family, and maybe that was her job, maybe that wasn't her job. That's very murky, actually. And it was difficult. It was difficult for our family, who'd been used to dealing with this on our own for so long, to sort of share that burden with her.
And meanwhile, your father was a doctor. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, and you don't go into this that much, but surely he had his own opinions about all of this as it was happening.
I think it's really hard for a doctor in his own life to figure out how to deal with a dying spouse. I mean, on the one hand, you understand what's happening in the body, the functions shutting down, the way that breathing is changing, the way that skin is changing. That's all part of your medical training. But on the other hand, it's completely, loss is irrational. You don't want to let go. There's always going to be things that are left undone. And so I feel my father had a particularly hard role trying to figure out how much of a doctor he was going to be in his own house.
Your mother left you her journals. Now, did those cover, I think it was only a portion of her life. It was, they didn't go back to childhood.
No.
Did she only start writing once she got sick?
Yes.
What was in her journals? What kind of things did she cover? And I guess she was really thinking of you, her only child, her daughter, when she started writing them.
Yeah, I think they were partly for me and also partly for her. They look like journals, probably a lot like your journal or my journal would look, with, ranting about the day or irritations that she had, or moments of real beauty and joy. I think she did turn her attention toward that quite a bit at the end, you know, trying to see the beauty of the ocean or the birds or the dogs or the deck, you know, bringing that into her every day because she was very sick and she realized that she wasn't going to have forever to see those things. And so they're fairly mundane, actually, and they don't address me directly, but there were some moments, and one of them is actually in the afterword of the book, that made me feel stronger and more certain that she would have been accepting of this project, the memoir project.
Right. And there is this very strange thing that was in that moment that you, the part in her journal that you quote in the afterword, where she says, "Oh, Robin, I'm going to miss you so much. Hang on a second, I won't miss you. I'll be dead. How weird."
Yeah, how weird. And I think sometimes the most profound things can be summed up like that, right? How weird.
We're talking to Robin Rahm. Her memoir is called The Mercy Papers, A Memoir of 3 Weeks. Now, Mercy is the name of your dog.
Yes.
It's funny because it seemed like it would be an emotion that you'd find in the book, but it's not so much.
Yeah, not so much. It was a hope, so I made it the name of the dog so she could bring some in, but unfortunately she failed a little bit on that.
Well, the dog, it's an interesting thing because dogs do figure prominently in the book. I mean, in the beginning you have this relationship with various dogs that you're fostering, which kind of reads like a series of bad dates or something.
Yeah.
And then you get this just incredibly loyal dog, and the dog seems to me, reading the book, as the one character who is perfectly innocent.
She is, yes. I think that Mercy was perfectly innocent, and in over her head, too, in many ways. I mean, she had this other big, huge dog always trying to attack her, and she was a puppy, and she didn't really know anything. And, you know, I think she was bewildered and innocent, and in a way it was wonderful to have that right alongside me throughout that whole time.
So you wrote this book. How long did it take you after your mother died to really see the project through, and how did the writing change during that time?
Well, I wrote the heart of the book really fast. I wrote the heart of the book while my mom was dying, and probably within a month after she died. I wrote many pages, and it was the heavy stuff. And then I put this book, it was just pages, and I put it in a box, and I put it away, and I sold my story collection, and I did all of that. And I didn't think about this book as a project for kind of a long time, but every once in a while I would take the pages out and look at them and feel like there was something really vivid in the book. I felt like it was becoming something. I would work on it a little more. I would clarify a scene. And then I tried to conceive of it as a project with some people in graduate school, some professors, and I was having trouble. And eventually I did show it to someone, my agent, and she, after a back and forth, we decided to show what I had to my editor at Scribner, and my editor wanted to make it a book. And that actually was the first real moment where I thought, oh, maybe this blob can become something bigger than a blob. And it wasn't really a blob. I mean, I tend to write like a fiction writer, so it was all scenes and it all had this forward momentum. And then the writing process after that was finding a beginning, finding an end, making sure that my mother was healthy at some points in the book, putting in memory and putting in light, you know, because it is such a dark book that there need to be these moments of humor and light and memory, and I definitely went back and added a lot of that.
Some of the humor is pretty dark too, like that. This floored me. At the funeral, somebody comes up to your father and says that she wants to introduce your father to a recently divorced eligible bachelorette, and you're just thinking, she's not even cold in the grave.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is, this is some of the truth I was trying to unearth. People do amazing things in the face of death, and a lot of inappropriate things happen. And my poor dad.
It's very interesting. I guess I wondered how the process of writing it, finishing it, rereading it, editing it, has changed your relationship to the content of the book, to the grief, the irritation, the anger, and all the stuff that we see. Did the process of writing it change that or transform that for you?
One of the most interesting things about writing this book was that I really felt like I got to spend more time with my mother. That for the years I was working on it, she was really vivid and she was alive and I could interact with her. And the book, writing this book was actually really soothing and happy for that reason. Even though it's such traumatic stuff and even though it's about loss, it's also about a mother-daughter relationship that was really fierce and strong. And I enjoyed writing it. It wasn't this sort of therapeutic or cathartic experience exactly. It was more, and I know it doesn't read like that necessarily, but more of a celebration of that relationship for me. And I wrote it over quite a long period of time. My mother died in 2004. It's just coming out now. It's 2009. And so I have had quite a bit of time to think and change and grow, but I'm sure even if I hadn't written the book, that would be true.
Is there anything, and this is perhaps not a good question, but is there anything that, looking back with what you know now, and especially having digested it through the writing process, that you would do
differently? That I would do differently in terms of what I did in the house when my mom was
dying? Yeah.
You know, I don't think I would do a whole lot differently just because it was what it was, and I do feel like my mother knew how much I cared about her and how strong our connection was, and she understood everything, I'm fairly sure. So it might have been messy and it might have been painful, but it was really authentic.
I'd like to give you just a chance to talk about your mother. She was a trial lawyer. Tell us about her.
Well, my mother, she was quite a force. She was a trial lawyer. She did some family law and she also did public interest work. She rarely lost an argument. That would include arguments in the house as well as arguments in the trial room. And she, I would describe her as deeply sensual, human, and passionate. And I think that I tried to represent that in this book with the house and her attachment to beauty. Even at the end, you know, when we had to rearrange her bedroom to get machines to fit, she was just horrified by the way that things looked, you know, the mess. She was very, very much an appreciator of what was aesthetic and interesting in the world. And so I'm lucky. She was a great mom.
We're talking to Robin Rahm. The book is called The Mercy Papers, a memoir of 3 weeks. So what's next on your plate? Are you going back to fiction writing?
I am for a while, yeah. This has been an interesting journey into nonfiction, and I'm sure I'll write essays as well. But for now, I'm working on some fiction projects. Yeah.
And you are a professor at the College of Santa Fe.
I am.
So tell us a little bit about your work there. What are your students like?
Oh, I have fabulous students, and I have students that surprise me all the time. I don't know if they'd want me to name them on the radio, but sometimes, you know, they'll come from places from all over the country, and they'll have these ideas about what they're going to be as writers. They're going to be poets, they're going to be fiction writers, they're going to be playwrights, and then they come and their world expands. And I have a student who's relatively conservative, who got a prompt to write about an alien and a drug dealer from, we drew him out of hats, and she just opened up and blossomed in this, you know, young woman who never would have done that, wrote all these amazing scenes. And it's fun to watch people grow creatively. I feel like it's a wonderful job.
Isn't that funny, just drawing something out of a hat? Have you ever done something like that where you surprised yourself?
Oh, sure. I think prompts are amazing, and I think they're the secret to producing art. I think that, you know, we do really well when we're problem solving. People do. And problem solving is so creative that if you're given a problem, like write about an alien and a drug dealer and a basket of apples, which I believe was her prompt, you know, you kind of have to solve that problem. And it wakes up something really deeply creative in people, instead of the blank page, which can often just be a terror.
And it points to some of the ways in which writing, which seems so solitary, in some ways is a communal process.
It can be, and I think at its best it is, yes.
So Robin Rahm will be reading at the College of Santa Fe at the O'Shaughnessy Performance Space on January 27th at 7 in the evening. I believe that's a Tuesday night.
It's a Tuesday night, yes.
And you will be reading from your book.
I'll be reading from my book as part of the first print reading series at the college.
And the college still exists, ladies and gentlemen. despite rumors to the contrary. The book is called The Mercy Papers, A Memoir of 3 Weeks. Robin Rahm is professor of creative writing at the College of Santa Fe and author of this book. Thank you so much for being with us on
really
the Santa Fe Radio
it.
Cafe.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Nick Appalucci for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the colors of jazz. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.